reading, but I just pants and I just write what I, what comes to my mind. I always, in the morning, I meditate first, and I always get a lot of great thoughts that come to me and solve problems in my, storylines and things like that through meditation. And then I always strictly sit down and I'm gonna try to write 1,000 or 2,000 a day, whether I reach it or not. I know it's productive. So that's mine, that's my process. I really make it a discipline. And like I have an office and I sit in the office and I write. So that's, I think a lot of people do that. A lot of people who finish novels, who finish whole novels that they write. I used to have to go away and be on the beach. I used to go down to like Newport Beach and rent a VRBO for a week and write. I needed to be focused, but now I can write in a cafe with noise. I can write anywhere now, but as long as I'm writing,
On that note, Lorraine Ivanoff, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
You're very welcome.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report.
On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission.
Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Since October 2023, Israel has killed nearly 70,000 Palestinians and wounded more than 170,000. Nearly everyone in Gaza has been displaced by Israel multiple times, and Gaza has largely been reduced to rubble. Israel has violated the latest ceasefire at least 393 times and killed at least 312 Palestinians since it went into effect on October 10th, 2025. In three recent cases, the International Court of Justice found a plausible case of genocide by Israel, that Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory is unlawful, and that Israel has illegally used starvation of civilians as a weapon of war. The International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity. And since October 2023, the Israeli military has repeatedly bombed Gaza's healthcare facilities. The World Health Organization has reported 735 attacks on healthcare in Gaza from October 7th, 2023 to June 11th, 2025, that have killed 917 persons and injured 1,411, affected 125 health facilities, and damaged 34 hospitals. UN experts have stated that the targeted destruction of Gaza's healthcare system by the Israeli Defense Forces amounts to medicide, and have accused Israel of deliberately attacking and starving healthcare workers, paramedics, and hospitals to wipe out medical care in Gaza as a sinister component of the intentional creation of conditions calculated to destroy Palestinians in Gaza, which constitutes an act of genocide. UN experts have further warned that the system of apartheid targeting Palestinians in the occupied territory and the continuous attacks in Gaza on the healthcare system and healthcare workers who have been consistently targeted, detained, tortured, and like the rest of the population, starved, are straining the last remaining resources in Gaza. This targeting by Israel of Palestinian health facilities, medical personnel, and patients is considered a war crime under the 1949 Geneva Convention. Many healthcare workers in the United States have been speaking out against Israel's genocide in Palestine, the attacks on healthcare workers, and the targeted destruction of Gaza's healthcare system. However, for these healthcare workers, doing so has resulted in silencing, exclusion, harassment, physical threats and harms, defamation, all while advocating for Gaza and Palestinian human rights. So with us today to talk about the backlash faced by healthcare workers in the United States who advocate for Palestinian human rights and speak out against the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and how this backlash is affecting both parents, patients, and the healthcare system, are our guests, Dr. Asfia Qadr, an adult and child adolescent psychiatrist based in Minnesota, where she cares for children and their families at the intersections of mental health, transgenerational trauma, and child development. She completed her residency and fellowship at Mayo Clinic and has been working in the Twin Cities at Prairie Care Newport since 2016. Welcome, Dr. Qadr, to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you so much, Nagua. Thank you so much for having me and for creating the space to have this essential conversation.
Thank you.
We know that we're healthy. Thank you.
Yeah. No, go ahead. What else were you going to say,
Dr.
Qadr?
I was just going to say, when healthcare workers are targeted, and you laid it out very clearly, how the different ways, we know that the public are the ones who bear the brunt of that effect. And so it affects patients.
Yeah, and I'm very, very honored and excited to have you and our other guest, Marianne Denon, who's an award-winning freelance journalist and contributing writer at Truth Out. Marianne Denon, welcome to Middle East in Focus as well.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and again, very honored and excited to have both of you to talk about this important subject and really talk about how this is both affecting healthcare workers here in the United States, but also patients at large, and how this is affecting the healthcare systems here in the U.S. Marianne, if we could start with you, could you begin by discussing why you believed it was important as a journalist to cover the backlash experienced by healthcare workers in the U.S. who have advocated for Palestinian human rights and spoke out about the Israeli genocide in Gaza?
The Palestinian people are enduring a decades-long occupation and now a genocide. You went through some of the horrifying statistics from just how extensive the damage has been in Gaza over the last 2 years. I've been covering various aspects of the occupation for my entire career as a journalist, and covering the attacks of the last 2+ years, as well as the growing movement for the liberation of Palestine, which is grown significantly around the world during the last couple of years. I think labor, organized labor, is vital to that struggle. And this story about healthcare workers shows the barriers, the retaliation, loss of income, really serious repercussions that workers in this sector are facing. I think many of the sources who spoke to me for the story would agree that it's important to cover these experiences. To name the consequences that people are facing, the undue consequences, and to name the importance of continuing to build solidarity within the profession here in the U.S. and between healthcare workers in the U.S. and their colleagues in Palestine, whom Israel has targeted for arrest, for assassination. And so the piece grew out of acknowledgement for the organizing that's going on in the U.S. and how difficult it is, and particularly some organizing that Dr. Qadr is involved in. I hope she'll speak more to that.
And actually, to that point about the organizing that is going on and how difficult it has been because of the backlash that healthcare workers are experiencing in speaking out. Despite that, folks like Dr. Qadr have continued to organize and speak out. So, Dr. Qadr, I want to turn to you now. Can you talk about how anti-Palestinian racism is actually entrenched across healthcare institutions nationwide, including your own experiences, and how this is impacting patient care, and how you, despite this, have continued to speak out about what is happening in Palestine and the violation of human rights happening in Palestine against Palestinians?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, for your listeners, what I'll say is, as a healthcare worker, organizing around Palestine in this moment and speaking up and naming and opposing genocide, we do so as a matter of professional obligation. We don't consider it exceptional. We consider it the norm, right? This is the way that healthcare workers ought to show up to maintain our oaths and our responsibility to our patients and our communities and to protecting life. And so when we are organizing, despite the retaliation and the repression, we are doing so as a matter of professional obligation and moral imperative. I think, you know, as a healthcare worker organizing, I have, you know, firsthand witnessed my colleagues endure retaliation of all different forms, you know, the doxing, the smear campaigns, et cetera. And these are all rooted in eliminationist policies in order to silence us, right? And so, you know, we've seen physicians fired, right? Most prominently, Dr. Rupa Maria from UCSF, after she spoke up about genocide and she outlined the connections between the hospital and Zionist organizations in the community and, you know, politicians that were involved in how all of that collaboration really leads to harm to the local communities and reinforces genocide. We all saw Umayma Muhammad, who is a Palestinian medical student who has now been suspended from her medical school at Emory after she very appropriately spoke up and sounded the alarm that U.S. physicians are joining the Israeli occupation forces in Gaza and then coming back to U.S. hospitals and teaching medical students and caring for patients without any accountability or oversight whatsoever. More recently, we know the example of Dr. Sam Sheikh Ali. He's, for those who don't know, he's an ER doctor in Chicago, and he spent part of the last year defending his medical license at the medical board against erroneous accusations. Again, the goal being to end his career, to target the careers of healthcare workers so that we can't care for patients, right? So we can't get to the clinic or the hospitals and care for you, the listeners, the public, all as punishment for speaking up and naming the genocide. And so you can see clearly how Zionism in medicine is a direct cause of healthcare iniquities in the community, right? By eliminating physicians, eliminating nurses, we are not there to care for you. And for many of us who are speaking up in this moment where it's so against the grain and against all the retaliation, we're doing so at a time that's very unpopular to do so, right? And we're doing it out of principle. We are among the most ethical healthcare workers out there providing care. And so when we are targeted, really it's the public that's being targeted. One of the things that happened to me in my own example at Prairie Care Newport is that in July 2024, I gave a healthcare training on trauma-informed care. Again, my specialty is mental health in youth and families. So I was teaching about mental health care for Palestinians, Black communities, and Indigenous communities to Minnesota, specifically in the context of how do healthcare workers show up in ways that are using trauma-informed care principles so that we are helping our patients heal. And within one day, you know, due to outside Zionist pressure by the JCRC, the lecture was removed from access, right? And it remains banned to this day. And so again, as an example, I started wondering, like, well, what about my colleagues? Who else has faced censorship, right? So a colleague of mine, together, we actually started a survey of our colleagues across the U.S. And it's ongoing, but the preliminary results are really jarring. And I think we owe it to your listeners and the public to share with them that what we've found is that there actually is a pattern right now. There is a widespread practice of banning Palestinian health education across multiple states across the U.S. And it really doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a public hospital or a private academic institution, whether it's for-profit, not-for-profit, East Coast, West Coast, Minnesota. It's across the board, across multiple medical fields. And it's doctors, nurses, social workers. All of us are facing the same, you know, systematic erasure of Palestinian health education. So again, you see Zionism in medicine, a direct line where, you know, I say this in the article too, that healthcare workers don't have the clinical education and training they need to care for our patients, and specifically Palestinian patients in this moment, right? And a lot of times in medicine, when we are learning and getting clinical training to care for a certain patient population, there are a lot of parts of that education that are helpful for other patient populations. And so you see this effect multiply where when we are cutting off access to care for one patient population, we're really affecting the whole population.
Dr. Khadr, I have so many follow-up questions, so I'm going to come back to you. Marianne, I just want to turn to you very quickly. Who is driving this censorship and harassment against healthcare workers, and who's driving this pattern of banning Palestinian health education, as Dr. Khadr laid out for us?
Sources I spoke to for this story, which included more than 15 healthcare workers across several states, as well as other people who've done research in the field. I spoke to a member of a task force at UCLA, for example, that had done their own investigation and 24 interviews with folks in the medical school there at UCLA. And they all raised similar examples and similar questions about who's really behind these cases of retaliation and censorship. Of course, they're coming through the workplace, they're coming through the universities, but these universities and workplaces are being put under pressure oftentimes by outside groups, whether that's pro-Israel lobbying groups, or in the case of several of the university people at universities that I spoke to, they pointed to donors, big philanthropic organizations who fund a new hospital building, for example, at UCSF, at the University of California, San Francisco. The Helen Diller Family Foundation has given one of the, if not the largest ever donation to a healthcare facility to build a new multi-billion dollar hospital in San Francisco there at UCSF. And the Helen Diller Foundation is also known to fund organizations like Canary Mission. Canary Mission is one of these groups that doxes people. It accuses of anti-Semitism. It's been in the news for doxing students. Some of the sources that I spoke to were doxed by Canary Mission. And so you have perhaps universities or healthcare institutions that feel under pressure because their major donors, their number one donor, is aligned with Israel and with the sort of Zionist project in various ways. And so these pressures come into the workplace, come into the university, and well, the termination letter that you get, or the warning letter that you get, or the investigation that these healthcare workers are subjected to comes from a higher up within their institution. Many of them expressed concern over the pressures that are put on the institution by these outside groups. And there are more direct examples as well. Dr. Khadr's example of the JCRC directly
what's
lobbying.
What's the JCRC, if you could say that acronym, the full name?
Yeah, sorry, the Jewish Community Relations Council. And so that's an organization that has regional branches all over the country. And I think in the case of Dr. Khadr's talk being withdrawn, and I believe she was also reprimanded and treated disrespectfully after the talk that she gave, that came following complaints from the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. And so there are some direct cases like that as well, and even more direct cases where organizations dox healthcare workers. There are a couple of examples of that in the story as well. So there's a lot of pressure from big philanthropic organizations, from pro-Israel lobbying groups, and from these organizations that dox and harass people directly.
And what about any corporations that are involved or behind this backlash?
Sure. Corporations directly, I didn't cover that specifically, but what I did cover in the piece are cases of individuals who sit on the boards of directors at companies like Chevron, like Lockheed Martin, weapons companies, fossil fuel companies, who are very much engaged in manufacturing weapons for Israel or in fueling Israeli settlements, fueling the Israeli military, and members of their boards of directors also exercising influence over universities or hospital systems. One of the folks that we name in the piece is a woman named Deborah Reed Klages, I believe, if I remember right. And she's on the board of UCSD, so University of California, San Diego's Children's Hospital System, as well as on the boards of Lockheed Martin, Chevron, and Caterpillar, which provide weapons, military equipment, and fuel to Israel and earn profits when Israel goes to war. When Israel drops bombs on Gaza, these companies make money. And so I think Dr. Cotter could speak more about the fundamental conflict of interest when you have someone who is invested in war, invested in genocide, and is also sitting on the board of a children's hospital here in the U.S.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking today about the backlash faced by healthcare workers in the United States who advocate for Palestinian human rights and speak out against the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and how this backlash is affecting both patients and the healthcare system. With our guests, Dr. Asfia Khader, an adult and child adolescent psychiatrist based in Minnesota, where she cares for children and their families at the intersection of mental health, transgenerational trauma, and child development, and Marianne Denon, an award-winning freelance journalist and contributing writer at Truth Out. Dr. Khader, can you actually speak to that exact point that Marianne ended with, which is how much of a conflict of interest it is that you have folks who are invested in genocide and war sitting on the board of, for example, children's hospitals?
I mean, it's a tremendous conflict of interest, to say the least, right? It's entirely unethical. Your listeners are the number one stakeholders in their hospitals and clinics. They have a right to getting equitable health care, period. And best practices are trauma-informed care practices. And when hospitals allow donors and political organizations to drive practice and policy within hospitals and clinics that ultimately impact patient care, then we can see directly that the patients have really been left out in the lurch. They have not been prioritized, right? And so when we are speaking up as healthcare workers and stepping into our responsibility, really, in this moment, given our positionality inside hospitals and medical institutions, it's our responsibility to lean into the retaliation that we face and use that retaliation as a lever to then expose these structural relationships that are compromising patient care, right? And ultimately, the health of the communities that we serve and serving genocide instead. And so I think what I really want to make sure that your listeners take home today is that healthcare workers are going to continue to hold the line, because when healthcare workers are silenced and eliminated, people die. And that's the reality of the situation that we're in today.
Can I actually have two questions, and we're starting to run out of time. But first, why do you think there is such a concerted effort to silence healthcare workers who are speaking out against the genocide and the violation of Palestinian human rights?
This goes back to Zionism in medicine, and it's not a new thing, but what we're doing is we're uncovering it now for the public, and we're able to see it fully unmasked in its true belligerence. Zionism is predicated upon the erasure of Palestinians in Palestine, right? It's a settler colonial ideology that ultimately is rooted in erasure, right? Erase and replace. And while a lot of the public started to understand something of how universities function more like hedge funds, reinforcing and supporting Israeli settlements and the apartheid system, and in this moment, profiting off genocide. It's time for, you know, the public to be able to see hospitals in their true light as well, right? Hospitals have a long-standing history of reinforcing chattel slavery and boarding schools and genocide here on Turtle Island. And, you know, what we're seeing unmasked in this moment, you know, through the lens of Palestine, is hospitals doing what they've always done, you know, aligning with political interests and academic institutions, political institutions, medical institutions have historically, and I used to teach about this for many years, historically collaborated to reinforce eliminationist policies in the service of empire. And so we're seeing exactly that when our hospitals are shutting down and retaliating against an entire professional class that would, you know, if we were able to organize and mobilize effectively, then we would be a very powerful voice and a very powerful impact in stemming and stopping the genocide.
Dr. Khadr, extremely powerful words that you're sharing and thoughts that you're sharing with us. I will definitely, hopefully, have you both back to continue this conversation. But I want to end with this last question. Dr. Khadr, can you discuss why the censorship and harassment against healthcare workers who advocate for Palestinian human rights and speak out against the Israeli genocide in Palestine constitutes as violations of professional ethics? And what steps can be taken to effectively resist and reclaim professional integrity?
You know, one thing that you'll see as a motif throughout the story, and when you talk to healthcare workers, you'll hear this repeated in the mechanism of how the censorship and retaliation happens, you'll often see the accusation of anti-Semitism, right? And this is what happened to me as well, right? And so I think it's really important for the listeners to understand the mechanics here, because this affects how we think about this from an ethical frame and how we understand the role of healthcare workers, which I kind of just outlined. The whole accusation of anti-Semitism is functioning as what Muhammad al-Kurd says, very rightfully so, and he puts it so beautifully, as a red herring. It's a distraction. It's a distraction technique so that everybody's focused on this question of, oh, is this healthcare worker unprofessional? Is this healthcare worker anti-Semitic? Should this healthcare worker even care for patients, et cetera, et cetera? So that we are not talking about the actual issue on the ground, which is Zionism in medicine. Why is it that the CEO of the largest weapons manufacturing company, Lockheed Martin, is sitting on the board of directors of MassGen Hospital, which is the most prestigious academic teaching hospital? Why is it that hospitals are collaborating with ICE? You know, we're not talking about this anymore. Why is it that hospitals are allowing their physicians to go participate in plausible genocide and come back and continue to care for patients? That's going to be you, the listeners. You know, instead of having these conversations that we need to have to hold hospitals accountable and protect patients, we're being distracted by these accusations, right? And so I think that's a really important framing for people to understand. And it really, really underscores how unethical this entire business of censoring healthcare workers really is.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we have been talking today about the backlash faced by healthcare workers in the United States who advocate for Palestinian human rights and speak out against the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and how this backlash is affecting both patients and the healthcare system, with our guests, Dr. Asfia Khadr, an adult and child adolescent psychiatrist based in Minnesota, where she cares for children and their families at the intersections of mental health, transgenerational trauma, and child development. Thank you so much, Dr. Khadr, for joining us today and for your incredible work. Like I said, I'll be reaching out again to hopefully have you back on. We can have a longer conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I also want to thank our guest, Marianne Denon, an award-winning freelance journalist and contributing writer at Truth Out. Thank you again, Marianne Denon, for joining us on Middle East in Focus today. We'll hopefully also bring you back to continue this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for joining us on KPFK's Middle East in Focus. The only reason you hear this show is because all of you, the audience, support it. financially and support it just by tuning in. You are the power of independent radio. We thank you. Hope you will keep listening and continue to support us. I'd also like to thank our fantastic engineer, Carlos. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK